by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, and every week we bring in Janet and the gang from the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. And Janet, it's kind of a different situation this week. Me being multiple states away has really added a little excitement into this show.
That's right. I'm not sure if we're pitying you or celebrating you today, Drew, but welcome back to Wyoming.
We have been waiting for this moment for quite some time now, as there are a lot of people that are concerned about certain species. There are some that are overly confident that there are species that aren't having any kind of difficulties, and the season setting meetings are behind us and we're ready to roll.
That's right. And we talk about this often, Drew, that the season setting process is actually a year-round process with the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. But the big part of it, where we have our meetings, where we're proposing the changes to the seasons for 2024, are just behind us at the end of March. We met with the commission earlier in April, and the seasons have been set. So everything is out there online, ready to roll. And we really want to invite the public to get on there and see what's out there.
Over the last couple of years, Justin Benfit has been a pretty essential part of the show, of letting us know the status of a lot of the wildlife and the big game and how it's looking. And Justin, we appreciate you taking time out of your new busy schedule and coming back on with us.
And I think you just nailed it right there, Drew. His new busy schedule. For folks that didn't know, Justin Benfit was just promoted within the agency. So now he'll be our assistant division chief for wildlife, which is what we call our deputy director. Or no, what is it? Deputy chief. Or you could be the deputy director, Benfit. Yeah. But he will now actually be in charge of the season setting process across the state. So here in Casper, we're really looking forward to working closely with him over the next year and really working to make sure that the season setting process is an easy process for the public to understand, and excited for some new changes that Benfit might make.
Yeah, and Justin, last year, I remember we came right out of winter thinking that things were going to be horrible, but they ended up being a pretty good year last year. And how are we looking this year?
Well, I think things are setting up pretty well for us. I mean, I think we're hopefully beginning to dig ourselves out of a big hole that we've been in. But Drew, excuse me, still fighting a cold here, but it really kind of just depends on the part of the state you're in. So, you know, there was so much publicity about last year's winter, the 22-23 winter. And by all accounts, you know, like we've talked, it was the worst winter in Wyoming's recorded history in parts of the state. And so the toll it took on our deer and pronghorn populations in western Wyoming was extensive. We'll be digging out of that hole for a long time. And despite all the bad news, you know, it's also worth reminding folks that not everywhere suffered those catastrophic losses that winter. There's some places where we're actually seeing a little bit of an uptick in wildlife. By all accounts, our mule deer numbers are still struggling across the state. We'd like to see more about in every corner of the state. But there are other places where they're doing a little bit better than others. And also some good news with some pronghorn populations. There's places where we're starting to put a few animals back into the population. This winter was so mild throughout the bulk of the state, and I think overwinter survival is going to be really high. Critters went into last winter in really good shape, so we're expecting some pretty good fawn production coming out of this year, and just excellent overwinter survival last year. So I think we're trending in the right direction.
We in some parts of the state this year, the snowpack wasn't as great as people would like. But Casper Mountain has got quite a bit of snow over the last, you know, few months, and even in the snowies and, you know, some of the places where water will be a pretty big issue with us. But the forecasters are saying that we could end up having a wet spring. And will that even add to the health of the herds for next year?
Yeah, we really need it. So one of the things that we look at quite a bit is what's called a snow water equivalency map. So it's put out by the NRCS, and they basically measure just how much moisture content has been received through snow throughout the winter and then rain. And so when you look at a map of Wyoming, Casper's kind of on the edge of it. So Western Wyoming actually still had kind of an average winter. Southwest and then even Southeast Wyoming, so like the Upper North Platte, like Saratoga, Encampment, that sort of thing, actually had about average snowpack when you look at 30-year averages. Casper's been a little bit dry, although we gained a little ground with some recent moisture the past few weeks. But once you get to Northeast Wyoming, that's where we do have concerns. That Cheyenne River, Belle Fouche drainages in Northeast Wyoming are extremely dry. They're only about half of the normal precip received. So again, it just kind of depends on the part of the state, but we're in the mode right now, especially in Central and Northeast Wyoming. This is where, we'll take all the moisture we can get.
How are we looking for the season setting? I know the meetings are behind us now, and do you foresee people being surprised at the way things were set this year?
Well, it's always a challenge. So, when we always ask the public to give us, come give us your feedback. We encourage, as many folks as want to come attend our public meetings, visit with us, that sort of thing. And we really do in earnest throughout the state, try hard to accommodate public input, incorporate their suggestions to the extent possible. There's certainly always quite a few things that do get suggested to us that we can't accommodate. Certainly if we accommodated every piece of input the public gave us, our regulations would be as thick as the Denver phone book. But it's a real challenge, but we really do take it to heart, and we do try to incorporate their input to the extent possible. And so is what that has kind of resulted in is, and there's certainly some changes that are coming online for 2024. The general gist of it, throughout the state is really conservative seasons, antelope seasons, antelope tag numbers across the state are as low as they've been in my career. Deer seasons are by far and away as conservative as most of us that work for the agency have ever seen, going back decades now. So, we really do have conservative seasons in place across the state. Now the opposite's going on with elk. As we've talked, Drew, we've got elk populations are doing extremely well. And in some places, especially in eastern Wyoming, they're doing too well. And so we've got some really liberal hunting packages for elk, depending on where you're at, some new unlimited license issuance in some of these predominantly private land areas in eastern Wyoming. So there's also some significant changes that kind of came down the pipe this year, too, that folks need to be aware of.
So the elk population, what can you contribute to the fact that it's doing so well?
Well, elk have kind of reached a critical mass in a lot of places where where their numbers got high enough. They can really grow pretty quickly overnight, just putting some more calves on the ground. But really, largely, I think the biggest thing you would attribute population growth in elk to in eastern Wyoming is just the land ownership patterns. We've certainly had a lot of changes in the past several decades with land ownership in eastern Wyoming, where there's a lot of large properties now that are owned by folks that bought those properties for hunting, wildlife values, that sort of thing, tend to allow a lot less public access than say was traditionally done decades ago. And so it's just led to a real imbalance of hunter access. And we all know that elk are pretty mobile. They'll go where they don't get pressured. And so it's just created a lot of systems or places where elk can seek refuge during the hunting season. So it's just made us, made it a real challenge for us to attain the harvest goals that we want in a lot of our herds in eastern Wyoming.
And then it's the exact opposite with the antelope and deer. And we talk about mule deer, but there's also whitetail deer in Wyoming. And are they classed together? Are the mule and whitetail?
Well, yeah. So, it kind of depends. I mean, they're under the same regulation, our Chapter 6 regulation. So they're managed together for the most part, but they're also managed separately. So it really depends. So in most of the state, where we have general license opportunities. You can utilize that general license on a mule deer or a whitetail. But we also have some additional whitetail opportunities that are whitetail specific licenses. So that those are your type 3 and your type 8 licenses. So in some places, we offer those opportunities in addition. And then in other places, we kind of manage them separately. But for the most part, they're kind of managed under the same season framework.
So overall, how do you class this year compared to previous years?
Well, with whitetails or with everything?
With this, the whole general hunting population.
Oh, I would say, you know, I would say it's probably going to be, there's probably going to be fewer big game hunters in the field than any time in my career. Just because we have gotten so conservative with our deer and antelope seasons. Boy, there's more elk opportunity than ever.
And in fact, Drew, one of the things that was proposed and accepted by the commission this year is what we're calling type 8 licenses, which are for elk, and encourage readers to go figure that out. But essentially, they are unlimited licenses. So you can harvest unlimited cow-calf licenses in different areas around the state.
Now, they're pretty much all private land only licenses. The only exception is in Area 7 where they're valid off national forest. So the bulk of which is private land. So with, you know, this is another tool in the toolbox that we're trying to give our hunting and landowner community to manage elk, especially in these private land areas where elk populations have just gotten untenable in places.
And just so people understand, if the herd is too large, what is the downside for, well, the landowners and hunting population in those areas?
Well, it's easy for the average hunting public to always think more is better. But it's certainly not always the case, because we have to manage elk herds to an objective, like all of our big game herds. So we have an established population objective, and we try really hard to manage those populations as close to that objective as possible. With elk, it's fair to say that most of our herds in the eastern part of the state are well over objective. So, you know, more is not always better in terms of that means we have to put a lot more licenses out. That can kind of, you know, that can lead to some things like overcrowding public lands, that hunter saturation thing, which actually can decrease the quality of hunt when we have to put so many more licenses out there. But, you know, the real challenge is for those landowners. I mean, there's an awful lot of landowners that absolutely love wildlife. They love having wildlife on their place. But when you start running into scenarios whereby they're dealing with hundreds of elk, or they're dealing with, you know, several hundred elk taken off the third cutting of their alfalfa, you know, critical cultivated hay that they're growing just for their livestock operation, or the fence damage that too many elk can create and that sort of thing. It's a real hardship for those landowners. And it's something we take pretty seriously. I mean, those folks provide an awful lot of wildlife habitat in the state, and most of them love having wildlife on their property. But when you get to that critical mass of, you know, just way too many elk, it's a real challenge for them.
You know, and one of the great things about the Wyoming Game and Fish Department is the fact that everyone that is in the department is at some way either a wildlife lover or a hunter or fisherman, and you're not out there to really dampen people's lives. You're, you know, making sure that things continue the way that they are for years to come.
Well, we're always trying to strike that balance, you know.
That depends on who you ask, Drew. Yeah. But yes, that is very true. We always do try to make that balance between everything, right? And the social aspect versus the science aspect. All of those things really start to come into play more and more with the agency as populations grow for wildlife and people.
So what is the next step? I know that you have until like the end of May to get in on your licenses and make the applications.
You know, right now is a really good time to do your research, figure out what licenses are available, what licenses you might want to apply for, look with the drawing odds, really read the fine print. If you have any questions, reach out to your local Game and Fish Office or your local biologists. A lot of that information, that contact information, is on the new website, and you can get in touch with folks directly. They can give you any tips. You know, as we've talked a lot before, you know, some things look really enticing, and gosh, why are there always so many leftover tags in certain areas? And that doesn't mean that the hunting is often super fantastic. It means that maybe access is difficult. So make sure you ask those questions and figure out different areas that you want to hunt, especially if you're a non-resident. Those things really come into play. We, you know, when they end up burning all of their preference points for a hunt, you want to make sure that you've done the research and you know what you're getting into, that you have access ahead of time. Written landowner permission is something we always suggest people secure way in advance, not after you actually draw the license, but maybe when you put in for it. So keep those things in mind, and we're always here to help. And don't hesitate to reach out at any time. Again, if you live in Casper and you hunt in Jackson, there's a lot of folks in Jackson who would love to help as well. Just reach out.
All right. Get over and check it out. You can find out more details, wgfd.yo.gov. Janet, thanks. Justin, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Drew.
Thanks, Drew.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hey there, it's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And boy, Brian, it's a little wet this weekend, but, you know, I think we're really starting to look good for fishing.
Yeah, you know, of course, the moisture is nice. It's making things nice and green. You know, the guys that are going to be chasing morel mushrooms are going to be pretty happy once that ground warms up a little bit. But, yeah, it's nice to see it. I mean, we had a little wet this last week, but yeah, today's turning out to be all right.
Now, we have been talking the last couple of weeks. When you go out on your boat to do fishing during the spring, you got to have warm weather clothes, cold weather clothes, rain gear, and mm-hmm. and you guys have really upped the game with rain gear here in the store.
Yeah, you know, rain gear the last couple of years has been pretty important in our spring. You know, we don't typically get a lot of rain, but the last 2 years, I mean, it's so unpredictable. Yeah. And it's just nice to have a good quality pair of rain gear that, you know, a lot of it's pretty lightweight now, although we do carry some pretty nice insulated stuff through Striker. So for that spring or late fall fishing, I mean, it's kind of nice to throw that insulated stuff on, breaks the wind nice, and keeps you dry. So, yeah, you got to definitely come check out our selection right now. There's some pretty cool camo colors and just some plain, just regular solid colors on that Striker gear. But we got frog togs in. We got, if you want to stay inexpensive and something more, a little more packable. Had some people in this week that were heading down to Denver to Red Rocks for a concert, you know, and that frog togs is packable enough that, you know, you can get in for something like that.
Well, and I'll tell you that, you know, after last year when we were at the Walleye Stampede, we had a couple mm-hmm. of days it was really cold and really wet, and not having the proper rain gear out there really weighs a toll on you, because you're not, you know, just out there for 30, 40 minutes. You're out there for a full day.
Yeah, I mean, it's to the point where, I mean, even if it's just a light dew, I mean, it eventually, if you don't have good rain gear, it just kind of works straight through the fabric and into the bones.
Yeah. Once you get wet, your feet or your socks,
miserable.
It's just absolutely miserable. And, you know, we were talking a little bit ago that, you know, there are even footwear that is perfect, because you wear your regular sneakers or something mm-hmm. like that. I mean, you're going to get wet and it's going to be miserable.
Yeah, you know, and when I've got conditions like we had this last week, you know, a lot of times I'll just wear my muck boots. I mean, they're mm-hmm. a little bulky on the boat, but, you know, we do have some lower cut ones. But, you know, it's important to keep your feet not only dry but warm. You know, and like you said, cold feet can ruin a trip pretty easily. So that's typically what I wear. But there are some other options out there. You know, just a good pair of, you know, hiking boots that are, you know, good waterproofing on them. I think that'll get the trick done as well.
You know, you mentioned boots, and last year when I was getting ready for my first elk hunt, during the spring and summer is when we started talking about, well, it'll be here before you know mm-hmm. it, so you got to break those boots in. And really, there are, you know, quite a few miles that go into a pair of boots before they're properly broken in.
Yeah, I mean, if you're planning on just buying a pair of boots the week before your hunt, I mean, it's not necessarily the best case scenario.
But yeah,
there's you know, even some of these boots like Kennetrex, you know, they a lot of times will say there's, you know, close to a 50-mile break-in before they're, you know, where you need them to be before your first hunt. So Yeah, don't be afraid to get those boots purchased early and, you know, wear them over the summer, break them in.
And I know a couple of years ago we were talking, and boots were a concern, you know, the stock of boots, and how are those looking for this year?
Yeah, you know, during the COVID craze, you know, we had a hard time just getting our hands on leather boots particularly. Mm-hmm. Rubber boots weren't as much of an issue, but the leather boots were an issue. But, you know, the companies that we're dealing with, the Danners, the Lacrosse, the Red Wings, that kind of stuff, the supply on boots has been great, you know, and availability has been good. So had a gentleman last week that needed a pair of boots, and we just didn't have the right size and needed a different width. We have access, you know, straight to those manufacturers, and we can look at product availability. We can let you know if they're available. And typically, if we're dealing with a direct order like that, we'll have them within a week's time frame.
You know, you had mentioned that on some of those boots, it's a 50-mile break-in period or whatever. But what about, like, your mucks? You know, I mean, those, if it's going to be a sloppy hunt or a sloppy trip,
right,
you know, you have to have boots that are in well-conditioned.
Yeah, you know, and typically, I guess I look at those muck boots as not really a performance boot, in terms of you're not using that on a lot of your, like, let's say a sheep hunt, you know,
right, that
you don't get the arch support or the ankle support that you would out of a good pair of Kennetrex or Danner boots. So they are kind of a little sloppy, right? I mean, you throw a big boot sock in there, and you know, you call it good. It's, you know, it's pretty simple, as long as they fit and they're not, you know, rubbing your heels or, you know, giving you blisters on that aspect of it. But yeah, you know, the muck boots are always a great way of getting around, and they do make a chore boot. You know, it's a lower cut that, you know, so it's not as bulky as, you know, going all the way up to mid length of your kneecap type of stuff. And those are fairly comfortable to even to fish in.
So, you know, definitely get in here and check this out, because being prepared is something we have preached since this show started, because you don't want to get caught with your pants down or your rain slicker not on.
That's right.
But you know, we are going to have this nice weather, and I know I was back home in the Midwest, and it's already grilling season there, and they have been cooking left and right, and you guys are stocked up and ready to roll when it comes to smokers and all the goods for that.
Yeah, sold a smoker to one of our regular customers here last week, and yesterday he popped open the lid of his phone and showed me the lid of his barbecue opened up with brats all light across the top, and he had like six rack of ribs down below it, and I'm like, and where's mine?
Yeah, you know, I sold you that for a reason, pal. Right?
I got to do a little quality contesting here. You know, I got to make sure it tastes all right.
Well, you definitely get in here and check it out. And if you need pellets, you need any ingredients or seasonings, they got it here for you. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Thanks for coming back. It's Drew and Brian, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Of course, you can go listen to all of our episodes uploaded on demand every Monday at the radio station's app. Now, Brian, I know that you were able to get out and get to Glendo this past week, and you were part of the Tough Man tournament that was happening, and that's up in Alcova. So, like, fishing is on, and are you impressed by this year?
You know, Alcova always amazes me, you know, what people find. Of course, we had a little bit of a cold front come in and rain conditions, so it wasn't necessarily the best, but always nice to see guys catching fish. And man, the opportunity I had Wednesday to get down to Glendo, fishing was pretty good. I mean, it's a little different this time of year. You know, it's a little bit slower presentation. I did try some faster presentations, and I did watch a couple fish chase a lure up to the boat. So this kind of tells me they're getting ready. You know, the water temperature was anywhere from 49 to 53 down there. But you know, we had 13 fish by 1 o'clock, and you know, again, we talk about planning a lot. I did not plan well that day. I got to the boat ramp and launched my boat and had less than a quarter tank of gas. So we stayed pretty close to the boat ramp, but we were successful, and we had a hoot that day.
So how's the spawn? Is the spawn over, or are we to the next phase now, or are we just right in the middle?
You know, I would have to think that we're pretty much near done on the spawn there.
Yeah.
I think different parts of that lake, you know, spawn at different times. I think the fish that were up in the canyon, a lot of them are still staged up there. I think most of those fish are done spawning, but down in the south end of the lake, then you might find some fish that are still in that spawn mode. I know the pretty easy to identify the males because they're squirting pretty good still.
Yeah.
So that was easy to identify. But I think the fishing is going to be good. And, you know, I've seen a lot of pictures on Facebook of guys, you know, catching some big fish out of that river channel. And, you know, it kind of breaks my heart for the guys that are keeping those fish because, you know, we're fortunate that we're able to even fish for walleyes, you know, this early. Right. You know, other parts of the country, Wisconsin, Minnesota, you know, they've got a walleye season. So, you know, they can't even fish for walleyes until May 1st in a lot of parts of the country just to protect those spawning fish. So kind of breaks my heart to see you guys keeping those big fish. I mean, I know they have the right to do it, but, you know, if we want to preserve this great fishery that we have, I mean, we need those gals to go do her thing.
Right. And, you know, one of those areas is Glendale. I mean, that's a pretty, you know, big place for any type of walleye action. And I mean, it's a big body of water, but it's also got a big amount of fish.
Yeah, and we you know, we rely on those fish for natural reproduction down there. There's not a whole lot of effort with the Game and Fish supplementing walleyes down there. I mean, they do a little bit, you know, and depending on what their gill nets are telling them in terms of year classes, you know, they will put some effort into, you know, trying to get some walleyes back in there. But for the most part, you know, that lake, the production of that lake is really based on, you know, natural reproduction. So, you know, it's not going to hurt a guy to throw back a 26 or 28 inch fish.
Right. You know? Yeah. Well, you know, and one of the great parts about, like, the Walleye Stampede, that's a release tournament. So,
right.
You know, there's no issue when it comes to, you know, these fish that are being caught that are 26, 28 inches. And, you know, they're going back and being able to reproduce down the line.
Yeah, you know, and I think we realized that, you know, 20 years ago, you know, there a lot of these tournaments that were being ran were just kill tournaments. And mm-hmm. even some of the local business, you know, company picnic type events, you know, they've kind of got on board and they're saying, hey, you know, we'd like to have a fish fry. We're willing to, you know, keep those 15 to 20 inch fish, but really anything over 20 inches, take a picture, put it on a ruler, you know, we'll give you the measurement for it. We'll do a length to weight conversion. And so it's nice to see that people are getting on board with the conservation side of fishing. And we are fortunate. We've got a pretty liberal creel limit. You know, you can have 6 fish in possession. And a lot of states are only 4. Some are even 3. And a lot of states have, you know, an actual slot where it's, you know, only 1 fish. You know, you can have 4 fish, you know, 15 to 20, but only 1 over 21 or something.
Right.
So we have a pretty liberal creel limit. And just to be able to say that, you know, we threw back some fish, I mean, that are potentially good spawners, I think that's important to our fisheries.
Well, you know, and the way that, you know, if you were going to put that fish on the wall, a 28-incher, you don't even have to keep it anymore. You just snap a photo of that, and they can recreate it, and you can put it right back on the wall.
Yeah, take a length and a girth measurement, good picture, you know. I've always said, you know, whether you do a skin mount or a replica, it all comes down to the paint job on them. Because mm-hmm. even on a skin mount, they're still having to paint them. So, you know, get a good photo. Photos last a lot longer anyways. And, you know, you'll still have that memory.
Right. And you're helping to the future of walleye. And, you know, and yeah. even if it's not Glendale, but if it's Alcova or, you know, even Pathfinder, anywhere that you do some fishing, it's always a good idea to think about the future.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, we're pretty fortunate, especially in this Casper region. I mean, we've got some great fisheries. You know, Alcova's been fishing really good. Talked to Matt Hahn at the Game and Fish, and he said that the 18 to 24-inch year class is the strongest it's been in a long time at Alcova. And then Pathfinder, you know, it still always struggles with just forage base, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. those fish can only get so big based on how much they eat, you know. And,
right.
They don't have a lot to eat. You know, they're they're chasing some minnows, some shiners, they're chasing crawdads, but they're also competing with the trout and the birds to, you know, for a lot of that.
Right. And then obviously the river system that, you know, is the busiest stretch of river and water in the entire state.
Absolutely.
This right between, you know, Pathfinder to Glendale, that stretch is one of the busiest, and research now has shown that there's a lot of fish pulled out of that river.
Yeah, you know, I did a lot of studying myself back when Game and Fish was trying to promote a 20 fish limit at Pathfinder, and there were some independent studies, you know, about the stocked fish and the mortality rate on stocked fish. And I know that you know, the fly fishermen aren't going to agree with me here, but you know, they're saying that these fish have been caught so many times and they're scarred and they're, you know, they're dying because of maybe mishandling. Which is probably true. I mean, there's going to be some of that. I mean, that's the nature of the business. I mean, that's the fishing industry is really the only one that's a catch and release type of format. We can't do that with elk hunting or, right, or any other big game, obviously. But you know, the river system, especially because it depends on Bureau of Rec and water flow, and you know, when the summer months and there's water's, you know, getting depleted and they're only flowing it at 400 or 500 cubic feet per second, and now the water temperatures are warming up, that's extremely hard on those trout. And then, you know, it also makes them pretty easy prey for osprey and eagles and pelicans. Right. Yeah. And you know, when those pelicans get on that river system, you know, they can devastate a whole lot of fish in a short amount of time.
Sure can. So make sure, you know, doing the right thing is always the best thing to do. So get out and do some fishing, but, you know, think about what you're doing with those fish. You know, those 17 to 20 inches, take those home and eat them.
Yeah, great. It's a perfect opportunity for those walleyes, and there is a bunch of them in there, especially at Glendo. And you know, if you're a Pathfinder, I mean, Game and Fish really is encouraging people to take a lot of those, you know, 12 to 14 inch fish out of there, because, you know, it gives, they need to thin some of that year class down, and it certainly isn't going to hurt it. And you're going to have a great meal, and you know, it's going to help the fishery itself.
Absolutely. And of course, if you're heading out, be sure to stop in here to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Get all your gear and get stocked up for a great year of fishing.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. We are back. Thank you so much for tuning in. And you can always listen to all of our episodes, including our first week with Muley Fanatics' Joshua Corsi. Joshua has kindly come back on the show this week. And Joshua, I know we talked a lot last week about Mule Deer Days coming up May 2nd through the 4th in Rock Springs. A free event, going to be a lot of information, a lot of fun. You can go to muledeerdays.org to find out more. And I know that you have been a big part of the commission meetings over the last couple of weeks and really letting everyone know where we're standing. And I know you were such a big part of it. And what did you take from the commission meetings?
You know, I know the commission has been hearing and receiving a lot of comment and a lot of feedback, particularly with deer. I think across the board with all of our big game ungulates, I mean, antelope or pronghorn have certainly, they've had their knock on the chin as well. Elk are doing very well. Access to elk is a continued conversation with the robust numbers, particularly in eastern Wyoming. But in regards to deer specifically, I think we'll continue. And I think as the commission adopted Chapter 6 yesterday on day one of the commission meeting, very conservative seasons. And it's truly a direct testament to the recognition that mule deer right now are, you know, they're at a low point, and in order to rebound, there's going to have to be some conservative seasons, some antler point restrictions that have been put into place in some of the more, you know, popular areas with the public on general tags. I think in addition, the continuation of no doe fawn harvest, I think that was a message that was made very loud and clear by the public. I think the commission has heard that and they've reacted accordingly. So, you know, it's the one thing it's going to take with deer being able to rebound, mule deer specifically, is that it's going to take patience. I mean, where we're at right now is at a very low point, and it's going to take time and it's going to take patience before we can get these herds back. But the things that Wyoming has done to be in the driver's seat in regards to wildlife management, I think Wyoming is leading the way when it comes to migration corridors, being able to identify how important those corridors are, and to be able to mitigate the challenges that are faced within the obstacles of those corridors. I think the wildlife-friendly fence conversions, the wildlife overpasses and underpasses, I mean, those are all very active efforts that I think Wyoming is clearly leading the way. And, it's a good time to be in the conservation industry or community, because I think we have a commission and a department that is very receptive to citizen science. And I think that speaks volumes of what leadership we have in play right now.
I do feel that organizations like the Muley Fanatics working with the people. I mean, you guys are all just basically volunteers. You take people to become members because there's the love of mule deer and the conservation and all of the projects you guys do throughout the years is I think what's going to really be the key to bringing back a lot of the mule deer populations that have been down. Like you were just saying, it's been rough over the last couple of years, and working closely with Game and Fish, I think it's going to be a great thing. And I think that the true outdoors men and women of Wyoming understand exactly what needs to happen. And becoming part of the Muley Fanatics is a great way for you to learn more and help out. And how could someone, if they can't get to Mule Deer Days this week or in May, how can they become a member?
Yeah, I mean, the membership is easy. That's just a pledge. But I would be remiss if I would tell you that we're more interested organizationally in having members that want to be engaged and involved. To become a member, certainly it has some merit. Organizationally, the membership numbers are important for our organization to exist. I mean, it's amazing how many times when we're visiting with a partner how many members do you represent? Even legislatively, how many members do you represent? That's where the membership number really becomes important. But beyond that, and what I think to be even more important, particularly in Wyoming, despite the fact that we have chapters outside of Wyoming, our efforts in Wyoming is really an opportunity for sportsmen and sportswomen to be united, to share their passions for efforts that can be difference making. And what I mean by that, Drew, is that, we've been in existence now for 12 years, and to earn a seat at the table and to have the credibility, and I'm talking about the table of decision within the decision-making arena of whether that's policy through the legislative body or to have influence with the Game Commission. You don't just walk in day one and have that. You have to earn that. And I believe that we've done a very good job in not alienating relationships, being able to agree and disagree politely and respectfully, knowing that, we're putting our eye on the bigger prize, and that is to further the mission, not only for mule deer conservation, but the furthering of the sport of hunting and the heritage that is associated with that. Quite frankly, I believe it to be under assault when you look at other neighboring states, even right in close proximity to us. The hunting heritage is really needed a lot more forward effort and be on the offense than on the defense. I mean, you can look all around, even in Western states, Nevada, Oregon, Colorado, Michigan just recently banning coyote hunting and trapping for 4 months out of the year. I mean, the hunting heritage and the things that surround what we believe to be so dear are really under an attack. And hunters are a minority. I mean, we tend to think because birds of a feather flock together that, everyone I know hunts, so everyone must hunt. But the reality is there are efforts that are very organized, very strategic, and are doing everything they can. It's a different game. I don't want to sound like I'm just trying to push Muley Fanatics, because I'm not. Certainly it's an organization that I believe wholeheartedly in. That's why we established this. But, if you're not involved in the Muley Fanatic Foundation, then get involved with another group. Quite frankly, at the end of the day, if you being a sportsman or sportswoman or, if that's a very valued, treasured ideology that you hold to your very existence and being, then you're going to have to step up your game. Quite frankly, all of us are. We're going to have to be a little bit more active, because if you just look around at what's going around us, you know, what happens there eventually makes its way here. And, you know, this is one opportunity where I think that I don't want to get on a soapbox, but if there's a concern I have more than any other concern right now for not only mule deer furthering the sport of hunting and sound wildlife management, is the lack of engagement that we are seeing from sportsmen and sportswomen. I know everyone's busy, but I seen what had just occurred at this commission meeting. We kind of got on a tangent there, Drew. I apologize, but right. It's easy to talk about because you see it all around us. I mean, when I see the president of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission come out and say that the North American model of wildlife conservation is obsolete, needs updated, you know, it gives me shivers. So,
well, and as you said, one way that you can help this situation is to get involved. Go check out Mule Deer Days. It's coming up May 2nd through the 4th. And or go over and check out more information at muleyfanatic.org. And you know, if you don't try to do something about it, complaining is not going to help at all. So being part of the solution and not a problem is a way to really help the situation. And the more people that go to Mule Deer Days, the more conservation is helped in the long run. So, Joshua, we really appreciate what you're doing. We appreciate your passion and all that you're doing for not only mule deer, but conservation and habitat as a whole.
Thanks, Drew. You know, in regards to Mule Deer Days, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about, again, the great partnership with the Wyoming Game and Fish. Casper, you know, that's in your backyard, used to host the Youth Expo on an annual occurrence every year. That Inspire a Kid initiative will be front and center at Mule Deer Days. All, you know, all of the offerings from archery to, you know, obstacle courses to tracking, all of those kid activities are going to be tied into Mule Deer Days that will be facilitated by Wyoming Game and Fish. If you don't have plans, May 2nd through the 4th, it's 9 to 6, all 3 days. The expo, there's dinners Thursday night and Friday night, seminars, the kids activities. I mean, it's a whole suite or host of things to do that all celebrate the outdoors and our love of the outdoors. And yeah, I'd like to extend the invitation to anyone that's listening to please come and check it out. If you're interested to be more involved with the Muley Fanatic Foundation, we have several chapters across the Cowboy State, but certainly those volunteers that lead those efforts are always needing and recruiting and soliciting more support to help carry that load and to be more involved. You're absolutely right, Drew, that the strength is in numbers. The more united we can become when it comes to certain positions, the more united we can become for certain priorities, you know, that all reflects in the ultimate decision. So, yeah, please give this a chance and let's support this event and let's continue to make this the Cowboy State Conservation event for Wyoming.
Very good. Joshua Corsi, Muley Fanatics, thank you so much. As always, it's great to talk to you, and I hope everything goes great May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. It'll be in Rock Springs at Mule Deer Days. Joshua, thank you so much.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.